Hello and welcome to Clear the Air with me, Jess.
And me, Kaylee. Let's Clear the Air with Jess and Kaylee will be available on all platforms where you listen to your podcast. The podcast is there to discuss all things personal, mindset, political, female, and a mass of food sharing. So make sure to tune in to us every Tuesday. Thanks, guys.
Hello.
Hello, we're back.
We are back and we have a lovely, lovely special guest today. So a warm welcome to Holly.
Thank you for having me, ladies. I'm so excited to be here.
Oh, it's a pleasure. Jess, I think you're going to give us a lovely introduction to Holly, aren't you, in case anyone
is. I am. I'm going to read your bio because I couldn't do it justice on my own because it is a really cool bio. So I'm going to read it out for everyone. So introducing the wonderful Holly Matthews. Now, Holly is a former TV actress from Waterloo Road, Casualty by Grove, and Holly is also a widowed mum of two, self-development coach and founder of The Happy Me Project. The Happy Me Project is an online and in-person straight-talking self-development programme, podcast and online membership. Holly's TED Talk has been watched by over 100,000 people and she has appeared on Lorraine, BBC, ITV, Talk Radio and featured in The Daily Mail, Mirror, The Sun, Closer, Hello. There's a lot here, eh? It's awesome. Featuring everything. The Happy Me Project boasts two sellout workshop tours across the UK and has seen thousands of men and women go through its virtual doors. The Happy Me Project has a focus on simplifying self-development and helping people to feel more happy and less crappy. And I personally like that idea.
Mm. Wow. I mean, when you read my own bio, I'm like, well done her. She's done great for herself.
She's so lovely hearing it back sometimes. When you hear it back, you kind of think, oh yeah, I forgot I did that. And you kind of get a rundown of your life again. And it's that little bit of pride you can take in it. It's awesome.
That is true, isn't it? You do sort of forget all of the things. Well, I definitely do. And when people say to me, when I'm doing stuff like this, and they're like, can you just sum it up in a few words? And I'm like, no, I can't.
Definitely not.
Just, I mean, obviously I know your story as well, Jess, and just like yours, it's had its ups and downs and it's a lot of stuff. It's a lot of stuff.
You can't really compact it. It gets difficult, doesn't it? But I think the one thing I wanted to really touch on was, first of all, how did the Happy Me Project come about? Because I've never actually discussed that with you. And it is such an inspiring. I mean, I did a podcast with you talk with your the Happy Me Project, and I just found it a really inspiring chat, and you know, with all your members, I literally came out of the podcast absolutely buzzing. So how did it come about for you?
So it was probably one of the most organic pieces of work that I've ever done. I think sometimes, you know, when you're in business and stuff, you can overthink things, or whatever your work is, you can overthink things and you can try and create something and then think it to death and it just doesn't happen. And actually with this, it happened after the death of my husband, which obviously you said in the intro there. So after the death of my husband, there was a lot of press surrounding his death. So it was in all of the national press and all of that stuff. And then there was a lot of eyes on me, and there was a lot of eyes on social media, a lot of messages. And people were messaging because either they were going through something similar or they were just going through a difficult time in their life. And they were watching me talk openly about it. And they were going, how is she walking forward? How is she functioning? How is she doing that? Now, I really care about people. And I don't, you know, I often say to people, I don't know what my sort of drive is as such, but I have this thing in my head where I don't know what this even is, like, is or where it's come from. But you know that when you hear in films, when they're like in war films, and that it's like, never leave a man behind. That's what I feel like when it comes to like life. Like, I can't watch somebody else in pain and not think, how can we work through this? How can you not feel stuck? And I think that has always been in me. So when I was getting all these messages and stuff of people, I didn't want to just palm them off with like a message on Facebook or not respond to them. Because I know that when you're in those dark depths of going through something, if you reach out to someone, it's a big deal. And so it felt a big responsibility for me. And one of my coping strategies when it comes to big dealing with stuff is that I need to, in times of difficulty, create, not consume. So I need to do something. I need to create something. I need to be involved. I need to be learning something. And I can't consume. I can't like be on looking at the news or, you know, totally over scrolling and all of that stuff. I need to lock into my own space. So it was kind of something for me where I thought, I'm going to put together. So originally it was an online course. It was 21 days. And I thought, right, what I could do is I could just put together the very basics of the self-development that I do every day or regularly that helps me to walk through it. And I wrote it down. I mean, it was the most basic thing you've ever seen. I remember recording it. There was none of these fancy microphones. I was literally recording it on my phone at the bottom of my stairs and writing down titles and thinking, I'll just record the audios like this. Just did it. No overthinking it. It was audios, videos, and a workbook, quite straightforward. I put it out into the world thinking, right, that's a 30 quid course. I can give it to someone. Someone can just go and do that in their own space. Mm. I don't have to do anything, but I know that they're getting good stuff because I've put it together. I put it out in the world. I kind of went, I've done this thing. There it is. And then anyone talked to me about stuff or shared their difficulties. I said, look, I've got this thing, the Happy Me Project. Do it. See what you have a look at it. If it's for you, it's for you. If not, no worries. And within like a month of me putting it out, I just started to see more and more numbers, more and more people going through the course. And I think by the end of that year, there were so many people messaging me about that and the you know, how they'd used it and stuff and got benefit from it. And I was starting to feel like, oh, I could make that into maybe an in-person thing. I was kind of ready to people again. Mm-hmm. And it just had a life of its own. So it really came. I mean, when I look back, it was put together. It was launched 2.5-3 months after Ross's death. So actually, when you look at it now, when I look at it with fresh eyes, being away from that situation, I can see why everybody else was like, why is she doing stuff? Like, what is she doing? But for me, it made sense to do something in it. I think it's always been a case of taking something bad and making something good out of something crap. Taking something that makes absolutely no sense. Ross dying makes no sense to me. That was a man alive who I loved and who I was full of energy and life, and now he's dead. And that doesn't make sense in our heads. Yeah. So for me, it was then, well, if something good comes of it, then there's some sense. And that's kind of always been the way of me sort of coping with stuff. But it came from that. And now we're four years down the line of this. And it's went into something bigger, the membership. I have a book coming out, the podcast. It's like a whole heap of stuff. And strangely enough, I was looking on, I think it's like Facebook or something, or somewhere I was looking, and I'd actually come up with the name of the Happy Me Project about 2 years before that. And I had had an idea of putting something like that together. I mean, it was a completely different concept, but it was funny seeing it come up where I'd said, oh, I'm doing this thing, the Happy Me. And I was like, I never did that then. Like, it wasn't a thing, but I'd obviously forgotten about it. And then it came back into my mind. But again, like I say, it was the most organic bit of work I've ever done because it just kind of took on a life of its own.
Yeah. And I suppose it's like taking the, which I like to do with my bit, the silver lining. So something is so tragic, but if you can push and transform that tragedy into something positive, and when I say positive, I don't mean as in, you know, oh, this is great that it's happened. Positive as in, like, I can change. This has changed how I see life. Maybe I can help others navigate through that. And that's exactly what you've done. And it's beautiful.
Yeah. And that's why I totally resonate with your book and everything that you're doing, because there's lots of similarities, although the stories are different. As I always used to say to people, my superpower is finding something horrendous, something horrendous happen and finding the good. You can give me your whatever it is and I'll find something around it. It doesn't mean, like you say, it's not minimizing the painful thing or trying to say you wanted that to happen, or it's not that, but it's science, right? For every positive, there's a negative. There's something horrible there, but right next to it is someone good, something good, a joyful experience. And that,
I think I said that, whether it connects you to someone else, that painful experience, you get a new connection, there's your positive. Whether it's, you learn something valuable not to do again, that's your positive, and then you hold on to that.
Mm. Absolutely.
I think it's incredibly impressive how quickly you started the Happy Me Project, because like you said, 2.5 months to 3 months after going through that, that's a lot for you to process yourself and then be ready to help others. But as you said, it's a part of you really to want to go and help others. As it grew, with it being the kind of package, 21 days, here's what I've learned through my grief, I hope this helps you. When then it grew, was there an element of like imposter syndrome? I know that's, but because you were, it was a lot of reflection on what you'd been through. Then when you were, you know, being a mindset coach now, helping people through different issues in their life and what they're going through, does that ever kind of trigger or happen?
So much. Oh my God, so much. I mean, my background obviously is as an actress. So although it's been interesting because I've had to delve into so much stuff in recently writing my book. Mm. My book is The Happy Me Project, but it also has my life intertwined in it. And it's interesting. I've had to really go back, and I asked a few of my friends, because I was talking to one of my friends who was on a kids TV show with Biker Grove. And I was like, I don't really remember. I mean, I don't remember always doing this. And she was like, yes, you did. She was like, you used to be on set and you would be giving us a speech about how life is not a dress rehearsal. And I was like, I was 11. She was like, no, you did. We always talked about stuff like that. And I think there was an element of that. I've always had a very optimistic nature, and I've always had this, and I definitely think that resilience of being in the entertainment industry was massive for me, and it served me so well in the more difficult adult stuff that I had to deal with. But learning that stuff from being a really young kid was really useful. But yeah, the imposter syndrome side of stuff, for sure, like, because I'd done so many different things, and you know, we get taught jack of all trades, master of none. That's what we're brought up learning. And so I realized even up to a few years ago that I would say easily, like, just, it would just flow out of my mouth, I'm just winging it. And I realized that was actually a limiting belief that I was holding on to, because I'm not winging it. I know what I'm doing. I might not know the route exactly, but I'm no more winging it than any human. Like, I know what I want, and I have a route that I'm going to try and get there. But I was still saying that, and I think it was a cop out. I think it was an easy way for me to go, it's all jokes. Like, I didn't want to like take myself so seriously. And it was interesting. I've actually talked about this in the book, but it got triggered so badly because I never saw myself as a businesswoman. I didn't see myself as a businesswoman, even though I run two businesses. Mm. And I didn't really acknowledge or own it until really the last couple of years. And really, you know, as you say, things have kind of catapulted again in the self-development space for me and the Happy Me Project. And then last year, somebody sent me a message, and I get asked to be on, as you said in your list before, I get asked to be on like BBC radio and talk radio and stuff quite regularly to do a chat about something. So there's somebody sent me this message. This journalist had said, looking for a businesswoman who succeeded during the pandemic. Got it sent to me by someone. I'm like, yeah, sound. I'll drop her an email. Didn't even question it. Thankfully, it didn't trigger me at all. I was like, yeah, sound. Expecting her to be thrilled to get me on their show, because I'm actually really good at what I do. And what I got back was a message saying, we're looking for a businesswoman. I was like, all the triggers went off. All of the limiting beliefs went off. I'm not a businesswoman. You're not a businesswoman. You haven't got shoulder pads in a fancy suit. You haven't got a business degree, so you're not a businesswoman. All of the like noise of imposter syndrome. And because I do actually practice what I preach, I'm aware of my own triggers. I'm aware of things that could come up for me. I was like, ooh, this is interesting. Like, you've well and truly been triggered. Like, you are a front edge. You are clutching your pearls. Like, and I had to sit down and go, right, factually, you run two businesses. You have a limited company. You are making money from those businesses. You do what you want every day. You are your own boss. You are a woman. You are a businesswoman. And I had to literally like write that stuff down to just, and then I responded and said, and asked for an explanation as to why I'm not a businesswoman. What they were actually looking for was a very stereotypical old school kind of accountant or something that was like traditional business. But it was, yeah, for sure. And even this week I'm about to put out on social media that my book is going to come out and all of that stuff. And I definitely had that moment, and I'm sure you might have had this, Jess, at some point, where I flicked through the book, I've got a copy of it, and I flicked through it, and I was like, oh, I might just be about to get a hangover from all of the oversharing. And yeah. I just suddenly felt that, like, I'm sure you felt that at a point where I'm like, I mean, I talk about stuff, I'm very open, and there's probably not much in there that's like never been spoken about. But I guess when it's all written in a book form that you know is going to reach different people, and it's all in one space, and it's all your stuff, all laid bare, there was a moment when I was like, who am I to write the book? It was all of the stuff, right?
Yeah, I know. I definitely know the feeling, because when I did mine, it was like the day before, and I was like, oh my God, all my inner thoughts are about to be read out everywhere. And I couldn't sleep that night. Like, I've been writing a book about how I'd overcome certain things, and suddenly that night I was overwhelmed by them all. So I was like, how is this happening? But you know, one thing that I think is incredible is that you know, this imposter syndrome thing, it is just a limiting belief, because out of all the people that have helped me through my journey of understanding myself, understanding my triggers, understanding my entire life, have been people that have been through it, not professionals. I've been to see professionals when I was younger. It didn't work. After seeing a professional, I tried to chop myself once. So it just was not working for me. But the biggest transformation was when I was reading books, not from people that had a degree to tell me they could fix my brain. It was from people that had been through exactly what I had or in similar circumstances and using their tools. And then my life changed around. So I do get really frustrated when people try and say, oh, but have you got a psychology degree? It's like, no, but I've got a life degree on it.
Yeah, but I've lived it. Like I say to people all the time, like within the Happy Me Project and in my space, I'm like, I am you. Like I am you. I'm in the trenches too. I'm walking and living and breathing. And every day, you know, I try, you know, I know you do as well. Like I try to share those moments as well, where I don't want people to assume that you hit a certain point and everything is just easy now. Cause it's not, cause it doesn't matter what level you're at. Every level there's a new devil, right? Every level there is something else that's going to come up for you where you're like, oh my God, I've hit this and now I'm freaking out again. And you never stop learning. That's why it's personal development. Like as annoying as it is for us, we think we're going to like suddenly get the gold star in self-development and we get to stop and we don't have to do any more, but it just doesn't happen that way. And I'm the same as you. Like from being really young, I was fascinated by gritty people. Like that's what I wanted to read. And I've said before, but of all the people that you would think to look to as an actor or a performer, I remember reading Jerry Halliwell's autobiography, which I am sure she didn't write, but I don't know, maybe she did. And I remember reading it. And the reason I was inspired by it was because she was well gritty. She had done so many things and failed. She hadn't just gone to stage school, to drama school and just breezed into the industry. She'd scrapped about a bit. She'd done promotional modeling and she'd done working in place, you know, whatever, pubs and whatever. And I remember even as a young actor thinking, yeah, fair play to her. She's lived. And I made the decision as an actor that I didn't want to just be an actor who did nothing outside of acting, because I wouldn't have any life experience to draw on. And I thought, I'll just do loads of stuff and then I'll have good stories to tell. And I'm 37 and I've got good stories to tell because I've done some weird stuff. And it was always those people. It was always the ones that I saw had gone through hardships. And I know from my own, you know, the people that I work with, that's why they loved you coming into my membership and talking. It was so inspirational for them because they see themselves in you. They see themselves in our stories. That's why this podcast is great, because people hear the nitty-gritty of stuff. It's not like, oh, it's just easy, or you know, it's so easy, especially when you're in the entertainment industry, for people to see certain things. They see the nice dresses and the parties and the fancy stuff, but they don't see the other side of that glamour and that stuff. And we know, you know, the entertainment industry in itself is rife with all kinds. Everyone in the entertainment industry has got something going on, haven't they? I mean, literally everybody. Yeah.
I found the same with Billy Piper's autobiography. I remember reading that a few years ago. And yeah, that was amazing just to see that it wasn't an easy route. Like you said, once you see people on telly, you kind of think, oh, you've got it all. But actually to see their route and what they're going through. But I do think also society as a whole has made it, like you were saying about friendships and having people and seeing what everyone's going through. I think for younger generations now, it's getting harder and harder. I think because of that perfect self-image, everything has to look perfect on social media. They have to have the car and finance, the mortgage, all the designer stuff. And I think it's got harder for people to be truthful. Like me and my partner, we bought a house about 4 years ago and it was a wreck and ruin. It's like an old bungalow. We've had to rip it all out. We're still ripping it out. And I was embarrassed to have anyone around. I can easily admit that still only my family have been around. I still haven't brought friends around just because of that. Not even that I love my home, but just that they'll go, oh, it's not like the perfect home. I remember talking to my mum and she was like, oh, we bought like a kind of you know, I don't want to say a, oh, I always lose my words, like they bought like a do-a-rupper. and they were like, first night we had everyone round, they were looking at everything we could do, what we could bring out. And I was like, oh, I was like, I'd love that these days. Like, because it's not that we can feel like we're thinking it sometimes, but actually like you were just saying about when you sent that email, sometimes you're proved right with things. You'll have a discussion with someone and they'll say something that you think they thought, and then they'll say it and you'll be like, you are a prick, but they're not. It's just natural thoughts. Mm-hmm. But do you know what I mean? And I do think society as a whole has become a lot more, I hate the word fake, and kind of like everything being perfect. So I think definitely having you, having Jess, having people who are out here speaking and saying that life isn't perfect, I'm going through this, you know, I might have done well in this, but I'm going through this as well. Life's generally not perfect is great.
Definitely. Like I mean, I've got two daughters. My oldest is 11, my youngest is 9. And I'm so conscious of that. And I do hope, and I feel like maybe pandemic life has made us start to lean into other areas a bit more, because I think we were so exposed to that life. And actually, did anybody else? I mean, I really noticed that there was a certain leveler in the pandemic in terms of people couldn't fake all of the stuff anymore, because they couldn't do the trips to Bali and make out that was their life all the time. They couldn't showcase these perfect apartments, because actually they were living at their mom's house in Hull, and they couldn't do that anymore. And I thought that was really interesting, not because I'm judging about living at your mom's house in Hull, because exactly like you've said, that's not the reality. Like, life isn't always perfect. It's never perfect. And I don't know if the pandemic has made us start to address that. I've seen more conversations around the use of filters, more conversations about real life stuff, like, and wanting to share. And I think maybe there's that in the sort of millennial generation, maybe into the beginning of Gen Z, where they're starting to move out of it. Like, they're starting to care less about perfection. I mean, I feel lucky in loads of ways that I grew up on television, because it gave me a different insight into the world of social media. Although I didn't grow up with it, I knew everything was fake. And I don't know if you felt this, Jess, growing up in the industry a bit as well. Like, I never once looked at a magazine and thought, that's how that person looks. My friends were in, you know, Glamour Girls and stuff, and I was watching them have their faces like cut in half with Photoshop. And I never thought that. And I think for a while, I thought everyone knew that. Like, I was quite shocked when people didn't. And then filters came along, and I was talking about this yesterday. I kind of understand art, and like, I'm cool with it being, if you're trying to be arty and cool and like with your filters, I'm so fine with that. I'm fine with Vogue airbrushing their stuff. I don't always want to see somebody cellulite on Vogue. Like, I want us to be more the other way and more inclusive. Of course I do. But I'm okay if sometimes we're not, and it's about a certain arty look, because that's, to me, is part of performance, and it's part of that pretend. I think it only gets, when we should be careful is if that's everything, and we can't take a photograph of ourselves because we only use filters, or, you know, we don't like our own face, that's when it's a worry to me, because I think when normal people are doing that, what's the point? If you're taking a really polished photograph because it's a modeling photograph or your headshot or something for your business, then that kind of makes sense to me. If I've got a spot on my face when I'm doing a photo shoot, I'll ask the photographer to take the spot off. It's not a part of my face all of the time, even though I might feel like it is. But when I see people doing that, who, like, there's no reason, it's just nights out with the pals, that's making me feel really bad. Every time you filter. And I just hope that the younger generation are starting to go, yeah, I want to see people's pores in their face. I don't want to watch you put makeup on with a ring light on, because it's not what makeup looks like. Makeup look like that. So can we stop pretending that it does?
We have this discussion quite a lot of the team in the production company, where it's that we're trying to now create projects that showcase reality, and it's actually people can watch TV, they can go to the cinema and actually see stories and see things that relate to them and that they've been through. But also there is an element that when I go to the cinema, I want to escape. I don't necessarily want to see the trauma that I've been through for 2 years. Like, I want to see a cushy love story, or like whatever it is, you know. Like,
sometimes I want to see unobtainable beauty. Yeah. Sometimes I want to see Marilyn and Elvis. Mm. Like, I want it to be, I don't want to see all my celebrities taking their bins out.
Yeah.
I want somebody that, just for pretend, I know it's not really, because we know that humans are humans regardless. I know everybody's got to go to the toilet and take the makeup off and whatever. But I want to, sometimes it's kind of nice to have like that escapism. That's all right. But I think It's as long as it's not just us that work within that field that get that. Because I'm not sure a lot of people do. And I think, you know, even, you know, playing different roles in different TV shows and stuff, you'll have people that really buy into what that is. Mm. And that sometimes surprises me. So, I mean, I love what brands and stuff are doing with, you know, being more inclusive. That's brilliant. And I do, when I say I don't want to see cellulite on Vogue, I mean, I want to see it sometimes. I want to see more inclusivity. I want to see real life human beings, but I'm okay when sometimes it's just an arty shot as well. But I don't know if that's whether, you know, just coming from my background that I see it in that way. I don't know. I hope that we change, accept all.
No, I agree. Yeah, I think there's, sorry, Jess.
No, carry on.
Of reality and escapism. No, I completely agree. And do you know what? Just referencing your point you made a minute ago, I did have a shift definitely in lockdown, because I remember when they announced the first lockdown and everyone was incredibly scared of the pandemic, and there was that side of it. Then I remember thinking, everyone is the same now. Like, no one's off work and on jobs that I'm missing out on. Not that the world revolves around me, but you have that thought. I thought everyone's now got to be sat at home. Like, I don't have to feel shit at myself that maybe I've not had a job in 6 months. Like, I can just relax and go, actually, none of us can do anything. And I realized then that I did feel like I was in constant competition with people. Like, you're scrolling and you're seeing something. And instead of thinking, me and Jess had this conversation when Jess got her job in January. And I said to her, the minute I'd actually learned to be really happy and like, that's amazing and good for you. And it wasn't a reflection on me. It was just that Jess had done amazing. And that was what she was currently going through. But that takes a lot of work and development to get there. It's not natural to do it straight away. It's that ping and that I don't know. It's just natural, isn't it?
Yeah. It takes some work, you know, like as we said, you'll go back and forth, like it's a little cha-cha slide. Like sometimes you'll think, oh, I've kind of got this life business right now. I feel like I'm doing all right. And then something will hit you, or you'll have that FOMO or that whatever it is. And you'll be like, oh, life's hard. So hard being an adult.
And we were talking about this, I think it was last episode. We did an episode like about riding the wave. Yes. And I always say this because sometimes I feel like I've got everything together and I can sit here and I can talk advice. But then something else that I haven't experienced before has come in and triggered something that maybe I haven't worked on enough. And then I can start working on that. But there's always going to be something.
Yeah.
And it's just about making sure that each time these things come up, we now can deal with them in different ways, use different tools that we've taught ourselves or learned from other people to fix the pattern of a behavior. Whereas before, you know, if I was feeling insecure, I'd either go and get drunk or you'd take a sexy picture and I'd be like, well, have some of that. And now I'm like, actually, if I'm feeling insecure, I'm going to go and do a bit of self-care, have a nice bath, remind myself that I'm a goddess, like that kind of thing, rather than acting out. You've got to act inwards.
Yeah.
I did. So interesting, isn't it? And I think as well, like, we're all talking about like self-development, but one thing I'm always like conscious of as well with people is you're not broken just because you're doing this. Like, you don't need to be fixed. You're not broken. Just because we have tough experiences and we deal with them, how we deal with them, like you've just said, we all deal with stuff based on our knowledge and ability at that time in our life. So we can never judge ourselves and look back and go, oh God, like, I wish I had not done that on that day. That was a bit embarrassing. And we might reflect, but we can't sit in that space because we were just dealing with it with the knowledge that we had at the time. And then we learn better and we learn more and then we do it differently. But you're not broken. Like, we're not broken. No matter what stuff's gone down, there's always an opportunity. Like, I think about it a lot and I say it to my kids, like, any point in the day, any point in the week, any point in the year, there is an opportunity for you to go, I draw a line under this now. Like, I draw a line here and I step over this, and going forward, I am this person now. I am the person that doesn't put the sexy picture on. I'm the person that focuses on self-care, and that's going forward.
Yeah. And I'm so glad you brought that up, because this was something I did in therapy last year, because I really had a problem with that. I used to model and I did some reality TV, and I really hated myself for it, to the point where I haven't done that since I was 23, and I wrote myself off of any other career. I was like, well, I've ruined my entire life, that's it. And I hated myself. And every day I told myself, you're never going to do your acting. I trained my whole life at theatre school, and I felt, you've undone all of that. You've undone your scholarship, you've undone your talent, all because of these few years where you decided to go off the rails for a bit. But I was actually, through therapy, I've realised I was actually doing what I needed to do to survive in that moment. Without that, I wouldn't have survived. So actually, I thank that time. I thank that girl that I was at that time.
Yeah, she fought hard.
I don't know if I'd have got through it. I don't know if I'd have got through the depression, the anxiety, the mental trauma I'd had from a kid, I wouldn't have made it out the other side. So actually, it was like a key change just to pull me through. And has it made things harder? I don't know, because I haven't experienced any other situation. So it's got me to here. So actually, I'm thankful for that girl, because she really had a hard time.
Yeah, she did. And you can appreciate that. And we can look back on those times in our lives. And, you know, even me talking about the time just after Rasa died, even reflecting back, I've recently had to revisit all of that stuff. And looking back at that, I'm like, I'd watched some videos because I did a lot of vlogging during the time when Ross died. And I had some videos on my computer and I was trying to like get rid of stuff. And I hadn't watched any of them because I just wasn't ready to. And I thought, no, I'm going to watch some of them because I can't really remember a lot of stuff. It's really locked out. And so I watched some of them and I was like, it's kind of weird because I'm literally watching myself talk about my experience at that time. It's really weird because I don't remember it in the same way. And I don't remember what I'm talking about. And I don't remember the feelings that I was having. It's all blurred into one. As anyone who's experienced trauma will know, it just blurs. And so seeing myself, it was a moment of that reflection of going, she was doing her best. And it might have been messy and it might not have been how everybody else wanted it to be, but she was just getting through what she had to get through. And it was a level of respect for yourself and compassion of yourself that you did what you had to do. And I think it's really important for everyone that's listening to reflect on their life, and rather than, like you say, pour on judgment and scorn of you shouldn't have done that and you did this or whatever, just go, no, you were doing what you had to do and you were doing what you had the ability to do at the time. And then we learn better and we learn those skills and then we've got better tools to draw upon. But we've got to let go of judgment of ourselves. Like we've got to be kinder to ourselves. Like it seems such an easy like thing to post on social media or whatever, be kind to yourself, but it like just be nicer to yourself. Like it's one of the things we find the hardest. But whether that means like make sure you're drinking water and moving your body a little bit, and or just stop calling yourself names in your head, find nicer ways of speaking to yourself, it matters.
I think what you're doing is so inspirational. I think you're going to help so many people. Do you have any details about your book? Like, when can we get it? Can we?
Yes, I was going to ask this.
Yes, I'm so excited. So it'll be the 9th of June when it comes out into the world.
Amazing.
And it is called The Happy Me Project, A No-Nonsense Guide to Self-Development. It is 60 chapters, which sounds loads, but guys, I have ADHD. It was written for somebody that has very little attention. So each chapter is only 4 pages. And at the end of it, there's bullet points and there's pullouts with quotes. It's a nice, easy read for you. And so I'm dead excited for it to be out in the world. People can get it on all of the normal places, Amazon and all of, I don't know, where did books go? Waterstones, WH.
It's all over the place.
Everywhere.
All of those places. And I also have the Happy Me Project membership, which is a really good community and a safe space to land. And again, judgment-free. People in there have been through all kinds of stuff. And the support in there is incredible. And it's sometimes nice, isn't it, to have a space to go where it's not your direct people, but they're people who get it on their own levels and they just support. And I feel really lucky to have that space as well. So people can find me. I'm sure you'll put links below, but I am hollymatthews.com. They will find me on there. They will find book links and all of that stuff. And I'm very accessible. So just come and chat to me. I'll probably say hello.
Yeah, absolutely. We'll have everything linked on there so you guys can go check out Holly. And I just want to say a massive, massive thank you again, Holly, for coming on. We'll probably ask you to come on again. I feel like you've got so much. You're so inspiring. We'll be like, come on.
I think as soon as we've read the book,
we'll
need you back on again. Absolutely. Soon as the book comes out, we'll both read it. We'll have all the people reading
million
it. And
questions.
We'll come back on and talk about it. Yeah.
Absolutely. Thank you so much.
You're so welcome, Holly.
Thanks to all our listeners, and we will see you next week.
We'd like to say a special, special thank you to Audio Boom for distributing the series, and Poppel for our jingle and Raspberry.